Okay, so then in that
could be
yeah, I mean, I'm not, but the answer must be not somewhere. I'm certainly not an expert on that.
I don't know. I think it'll be from the sun.
Sonny Vashkantra are talking about super string amplitudes and stringing signatures at the LEC. Before I let him start, I'd like to thank him in the name of all Part 3 students that took Part 3 after him for providing us with So they turned out to be very helpful. We were really happy to have you.
It was a pleasure to write them. Okay, thank you very much to everyone who showed up for my talk, and particularly thanks to the organizers for bringing us together at this wonderful conference. The outline of my talk, Superstringy Amplitudes and Stringy Signatures at the LHC, is the following. I'll start with some rough ideas how you might get a standard model from superstring theory, very general ideas. And then in part two, I jump into the formal stuff. I'll show you which CFTs are involved in superstring theory. And then I'll show you how to compute scattering amplitudes on the basis of those CFTs. Those who fell asleep in that formal discussion might wake up at part four. Here I report some true results about our scattering amplitudes in a four-dimensional setting, and I compare to the standard model data. Then chapter five, then I'll discuss the measurable quantities, the cross-sections. No one has ever measured an amplitude. And the last part is the same as in any other talk. Well, why are we doing superstring theory, and in particular, why are we doing bosonic string theory? The purely bosonic standalone string theory has two major drawbacks, which you have met in David Tong's course, I suppose. Firstly, there are tachyonic states, both in the open and in the closed string sector, indicating a vacuum instability. And the second drawback of bosonic string theory alone is we simply do not have spinorial states. We do not have any chance to get space-time fermions from the bosonic string. So without superstrings, no chance to reproduce the standard model. Instead, we are doing superstring theory. Its basic ingredient is a supersymmetric superpartner, psi, to the bosonic string coordinate, s. And what I want to tell you now, there's a nice byproduct. The critical dimension of superstring theory is d equals 10 instead of d equal 26. So in order to get four dimensions, we only have to get rid of 6 instead of 22. Some good news, I guess. All right, which kind of spacetimes do we want to consider? We want to get four-dimensional Minkowski spacetime for everyday life. So let's factorize our 10-dimensional spacetime manifold M into a Minkowski guy and into something internal, which has to carry 6 dimensions. Written in gold, I hope you can read it. And the precise scenario relies on D-brains. I'm sorry you cannot see the strings here. I have prepared something. Oh, wrong. That's all right. Okay. Here the blue line is indicating the world we seem to be living in. And we are part of some D-brain, which is at least four-dimensional. There might be extra dimensions into which the brain is stretching. And all the open string issues are confined onto that D-brain, that green plane here. But of course, that D-brain doesn't have to be space-filling. There might as well be some transverse directions in that way. And those transverse directions, they wrap about compact directions in this internal manifold CY6. Okay. Now, the precise brain configuration is the following. If we want to reproduce the standard model with its gauge groups, we need several stacks of D-brains. As you all know, a stack of n D-brains gives rise to a gauge group un, or in particular an sun factor. So for QCD, we need a stack of three brains above here. Then we have weak interactions. And furthermore, we want to have a chiral standard model. So we need some mechanism to distinguish the left-handed meta from the right-handed meta, right here. Okay, in this model, gauge bosons are realized by strings, by open strings, which end on the same stack of D-brains. For instance, here you have the gluon with both ends of the string on the same stack of the three D-brains. The chiral meta, on the other hand, the leptons, the quarks, they are realized by boundary changing operators in the CFT. Those are open strings stretched between two different stacks of D-brains with some intersection angle. Okay, the next point, the relevant scales. As you might know, there's only one free parameter in string theory or superstring theory. It's basically the string length. More common in literature is the variable alpha prime, the square of the string length. And if we want to talk about energies, you just take 1 over the string length to define the string scale ms, which I'll use in the following. Okay, and there's a relation between the Planck scale of our four-dimensional world and the stringy data. It differs from Sven's formula because I have a different normalization convention. This is the relation. And as you see, in order to get a big Planck scale, something about 10 to the 19 GeV, we have two possibilities. One way of doing this is work with a large, large string scale. This would mean, okay, the string energy is far, far away from any collider experiment. We won't ever see it. But there's a different scenario. Just make the volume of our internal manifold very big. This is another way of achieving at the given Planck scale without making the string scale inaccessible. Here I have an explicit example for you. If we want to have a string scale of 1 TeV, that would be wonderful. Then we could see stringy signatures at the LHC. In such a case, we would need a volume for the internal dimensions given like that, which seems to be very big. Okay, then one of you might ask the question, wouldn't we have already noticed such a big extra dimension? And the answer is not necessarily. I have the following excuse for not observing them. Here you have the internal manifold. And as I told you, the standard model D-brain, I mean the D-brains which contain the standard model, they have to be wrapped around very small cycles in order to be undetectable. But the transverse directions, which are not touched by the D-brain stack of the standard model, they can be very, very big. And no one who is confined to the brains would ever see that big volume. So the scenario which I just presented, a string scale of 1 TeV, is in no contradiction to experiment. In that case, we can focus on that scenario and try to make some predictions for alpha prime corrections for two standard model processes. And this is what I want to do in the following. All right. Now we start into the formal part, which CFT is involved in superstring theory in contrast to the standalone bosonic string theory. That superpartner field psi for the string coordinate, it's a two-component spinner with two chiral halves. And that component here is an H equal 1/2 conformal field. And as you know from CFT discussions, every conformal primary field generates a highest weight vector, a physical state, which is a spacetime vector here. Here you see how to get a spacetime vector from superstring theory. There's a question.
Could you maybe turn off the lights?
Oh, yeah, good idea. Thanks. Okay, but space-time vectors are not the whole story of the standard model. We also need space-time spinners. and we can see how those spinners emerge in such a CFT. Take the modes of the psi field, in particular focus on the zero modes here. Due to the anti-commutation relations, the zero modes here, they satisfy a space-time Clifford algebra. These are gamma matrices in 10 dimensions. Gamma matrices naturally act in spinners, so we know there must be some spinners around on which those gamma matrices act. And a spinorial state has to be generated somehow from the vacuum, according to the general CFT rules. And those are the so-called spin fields. They are the generating fields of the spinorial states, and they are the second important ingredient in that superstring CFT. So we have a H equal 1/2 worldsheet fermion psi interacting with a spin field. The last slide has been a 10-dimensional scenario. As I told you, I want to go down to 4 space-time dimensions. For that purpose, simply factorize the Lorentz group of 10 dimensions. A vector with 10 components can be decomposed into a 4 vector of the SO13 Lorentz group, plus something internal. And the same story for spinners. A 10D spinner is a 4D spinner times something internal. And we assume those internal parts to decouple in the curve. To be more precise, a 4D spinner, 4D Dirac spinner, has a left-handed and a right-handed component. And the difference can be shown in that rather formal slide. Please do not try to memorize all the formula. The only thing I want to point out with that slide is the psi field and the spin field, they are interacting. And the interaction can be seen from the OPE that they mix. You have two different colors in one on the same line. But this is just an aside. Okay, next part, scattering amplitudes. You have learned in David Tong's course how to compute a scattering amplitude in principle. For all the scattering participants, you need a vertex operator, V, which is a conformal primary field of H equal 1. And then you have to integrate all those vertex operators in some fashion in order to achieve violin variance. And as you have some gauge freedom, you only need to integrate over n minus 3 positions if you have n scattering participants. We'll revisit that issue later on. The vertex operators for gluons and quarks, these are the particles I want to discuss in the following. They are given as follows. Again, you do not need the whole form of them. The important aspects are there are several independent CFTs involved. First, there is a red world, which you already explored in David Tong's course, the well-known X CFT. And then there's the blue CFT of the psi field and S field in 4 dimensions. We have just seen the OPEs. Furthermore, there are some other CFTs which I do not want to discuss. The only thing that matters, we have them pretty good under control. All right, and the big, big correlator of the vertex operators, it factorizes. So we have 4 independent problems to solve. The most complicated of which is the last one, as the CFT is interacting. This is the main obstacle to compute higher point correlation functions. And at the moment, I have a project running with my colleague Daniel Hertel in Munich. We're trying to find closed formula for arbitrarily large correlation functions with 2 or 4 spin fields involved, and as many psi fields as you wish. Work in progress. Just to shock you, this is a 7-point correlator with 5 psi fields. It took quite some time to get it. Yeah, and we really use that correlator in a 5-pattern amplitude, whose result will be given soon. Okay, now I come to the results. Firstly, some 4-pattern scattering processes. Several amplitudes have a nice property of factorizing. These are the 4 gluon amplitude and 2 quarks, 2 gluon. The superstring amplitude factorizes into the Young-Mills result, which you can look up in any textbook about the standard model, times some stringy form factor. That V factor contains all the information about the stringiness of that problem. And you've seen in David Tong's course the form factor for 4 particle scattering. It is given by the Euler-Beta function. As I told you, there are n minus 3 integrals to perform, and with 4 scattering particles, it's only 1 worldsheet integral. This gives rise to the beta function. I made a strange definition of the Mandelstam variables. I included an alpha prime here. This is relevant for the alpha prime expansion. All right, and there are some clever ways to rearrange the V4 factor in order to extract some physics. Firstly, we can do a pole expansion of that Veneziano form factor given in that line here. You see there's a sum of infinitely many poles corresponding to particles of increasing mass. And those can be identified with the Ricci excitations of the string. Those are the alpha oscillators of the string coordinate acting on the vacuum. You have the whole power of those alpha oscillators exchanged between the external states. And we can also read off the coupling to standard model fields from the residues here. This is one way of looking at that process. A completely different point of view is do an alpha prime expansion, meaning we expand in powers of the kinematic invariants, each of which carry an alpha prime inside. Very good news is the leading term is 1. This has to be the case in order to reproduce the Young-Mills result. Okay, and there's no linear correction. The first correction is order alpha prime square. And if we want to have a low energy description for that, then we need some clever interaction term in the effective action. It is of the form F to the fourth, field strength to the fourth power, would be the effective action which represents that term. I'm sorry, I somehow lost the picture. Okay, this was the story about four-parton amplitudes. Now I report some results about five-parton amplitudes. Formally, it's the same thing. As long as less than 4 quarks are involved, the amplitudes factorize into Young-Mills times the form factor. Of course, with 5 particles involved, that form factor is a bit more complicated. Just to show you, that's an integral. And this integral can again be rearranged in the same ways that I showed you before for the Veneziano 4-particle form factor. Firstly, pole expansion. You can read off some nice Feynman diagrams from the pole expansion. And please rather look at the diagrams which I'm showing. We can imagine one exchange channel for the Ricci particles. And from the rearrangement of the V5 function, you can extract that red vertex here. And of course, you can also extract the coupling to standard model fields. But there's a second, seemingly different Feynman diagram. You can also arrange V5 in a different form, which looks like that Feynman diagram here. Here you have two propagators of Ricci particles and a different blue vertex, which you can find here in the formula. And the message of that slide is these two diagrams are equivalent. They correspond to one and the same mathematical object, V5, and how you arrange it, it's just a matter of your personal taste. All right. And now let's do the alpha prime expansion for the V5. Again, the leading term is a 1. Again, the leading term comes from the Young-Mills theory. And the next correction, alpha prime square, it has 4 momenta. And that first correction can be recast into an effective low energy action with that F to the fourth piece, which I just told you about. This is a string contact interaction, which we can recognize from the first alpha prime correction in the form factor. Now let's talk about cross-sections. How can we get from amplitudes to the cross-sections? Well, take the modulus square, and then sum over all the relevant quantum numbers. These are the polarization of the gluons and the quarks, and these are the colors of the gluons. It's a long, long calculation, and at the end of the day, you get a result like that. The important points for me are to check the QCD limit, set all the V's equal to 1. If you do that, then you arrive at the well-known result, which is available in any standard model textbook about QCD. Also, on the level of cross-sections, you can see that our low-energy behavior is correct. This is actually taken from a paper of Dieter Lüss, Stefan Stieberger, Thomas Taylor. It's the LHC String Hunter's Companion, which appeared in 2008. At the moment, we are writing this at the second part of that. Yeah, this is the plot version of the cross-section. More precisely, we have several kinds of four-parton amplitudes here in different colors. And if you sum up all the stringy predictions, then you see that black curve with a sharp peak, in contrast to the standard model result, which is the dashed line here. If that peak is within an available energy range, then it would be easy to detect. But where is the peak? Well, it is at 2 TeV. And in this plot, we chose alpha prime to be like that. So the peak is at the string scale. If the string scale is low, we can see the peak. If not, then we can't. But if we don't see anything, we can still infer some bounds on that string scale. And as I already said, these deviations are somehow universal. The amplitudes involved in that plot are model independent. They do not depend on the compactification geometry. There are no Kaluza-Kleiner winding modes involved in that process, only the Ricci excitations for which you have seen the Feynman diagrams. In the second part of the String Hunter's Guide, which we are writing at the moment, we aim to get an analog of that plot for the five parton processes. And I should tell you why we are doing the five parton exercise. One might argue that this is just some mathematical exercise. Not precisely. Our aim is to get more precise information about the Ricci particles exchanged. In the four-parton case, you only have that exchange channel. But with five partons involved, we can cast the result into various forms like that, each of which gives some insight, some new insight, into the spin and masses and couplings of the internal Ricci particles. So this is a work definitely worth doing. Okay, let me come to the conclusions. What I would like you to take home is the following. There are some nice four and five parton amplitudes which do not depend on the compactification geometry. You know there's that string landscape problem around. There are so many possible string vacua to think of. And the amplitudes which I've presented are independent on your choice of vacuum. It just has to be Minkowski times something internal, but no details of the compactification geometry enter here. Yes, please.
And doesn't it matter if you're doing the calculation type 2B or heterotic?
It's type 2, yeah. I should have mentioned that, yeah. Thank you very much for pointing out.
Some other, and if you do it in another one, do you have any idea what you're supposed to get?
I don't have much experience about the heterotic string, but I would expect in principle the same behavior. Okay. In particular, the alpha prime corrections are the universal feature encoded in the Veneziano form factor or in the five-parton amplitude V5. These functions of alpha prime are universal. And as I have argued at the beginning, these low string scale scenarios where we can see the peak, they are indeed possible. They do not contradict any experiments so far. So if you're very, very, very lucky, then we'll soon see some stringy signatures at LHC. 2 points which I didn't talk about. Not all the amplitudes are universal. For instance, the four quark amplitude, four fermions. There you can find some signature of the internal geometry in the form of Kaluza-Kleiner winding states. They are much more difficult to treat, but they can be used to do some precision tests of the underlying Calabi-Yau of the internal geometry. And secondly, all the discussion here was on tree level. One should repeat the exercise on one loop, perhaps even two loop, just to get an estimate of how string perturbation theory is working in that context. There's also work in progress with my supervisor, Stefan Stieberger. All right, that's all what I wanted to say. Thank you very much for listening. Let's go to the unofficial part of the day.
Scenario with a low
I think you cannot answer that question from this viewpoint here. I think this requires some further study involving the four fermion amplitudes and further details of the geometry. I think that should be answered by an expert. I cannot answer this.
Sorry, just another question. You said your results are model independent. Don't you have to do any assumptions about the compact manifold?
No, you don't.
So anything I want, I can put it in there, and you always get the same result for the scattering amplitude.
From the point of view of the scattering amplitude, from the point of view of the scattering amplitude, this is the case. Of course, there are some physical limitations. You need some compact extra dimensions where the brain is stretching. Otherwise, you would have detected that. The point is, the details of the geometry can only be seen from the internal spin fields. The 10D spin field theta was factorized into the 4D part, and that psi field, the internal part of the spin field. And you only see the signatures of the geometry if four of them, at least, are involved in one correlation function. In that case, some inciton effects occur, which you somehow get from the path integral. Does this answer your question?
There are no more questions, Oli. Then I would like to thank Oli and all the speakers again.
Sorry, the problem.